Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's HandyLink. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. The first segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Caddy Leshsinger from the Dupe 15Q Alliance. Say a little bit about the Dupe 15Q Alliance.
The Dupe 15Q Alliance is an international organization. We serve around 1,000 families all over the world who have a child with a duplication on their 15th chromosome.
So, how would this typically affect someone?
Someone with Dupe 15Q syndrome oftentimes has seizures, autism, global developmental delays, and they present differently within the disorder, but for the most part, I would say that the majority have just developmental delays, and like I said, probably about 50% of the individuals suffer from seizures as well.
So, can you give me an overview of the Alliance's work? You mentioned you work with 1,000 families. What sort of work?
The types of projects that we do is we offer family support, and that's provided through international conferences. So every other year, we host a conference where families travel from all over the world. This next conference happens to be in Orlando, Florida, this July. So we put on a three-day conference. We offer regional gatherings, webinars, and newsletters in the meantime to also get across the newest information and findings. We also fund research specifically for Dupe 15Q syndrome, and we hold annual science meetings. So we're the only organization in the world that hosts and funds a yearly scientific meeting devoted just to Dupe 15Q syndrome.
So, do you work in partnership with any other organizations?
We do. We collaborate with many organizations through many in the epilepsy field as well as the autism field. We're partnered, like I said, for many collaborations. For example, we're part of the Rare Epilepsy Network, and that's a database that collects information. There's 11 organizations involved in it, and they collect information about seizures and the rare disorders. We also have some what I would call like sister organizations or chapters in other countries as well, and so we work with them as well.
So in your time with the Alliance, has there been any challenge related to this work?
I would say the biggest challenge is funding. You know, in the nonprofit world, funding, especially for research, funding is limited and resources are hard to come by because our families they certainly have a lot going on, so it's hard to rely on just our families for research and or for fundraising. But we've been really fortunate that we've had many families step up and help with this, because since we're volunteer run, we rely solely on donations and to put on the conferences, the science meetings, and the newsletters. We don't charge membership to our members as well, so anything we get, we're giving back to our members to try to help them in terms of support and research and education and awareness.
So how do you go about spreading the word about the work of the Alliance?
A lot of that is done through collaboration, and that's partnering with other organizations that certainly helps us get our message out. But we've also, for example, we've sent out, this past year we did an advertisement to all the genetic counselors in the United States. A message was sent to them. We really try to get our message across, and a lot of our members are helpful with that in terms of spreading awareness and information about the syndrome. And we do have members who, like for example, we have an awareness day, and we'll provide the marketing materials or the verbiage and such for that. And they have really been great about bringing that message out to their communities as well.
So what are the next immediate steps for the Alliance?
Well, this year is in particular a really big year for us because we want to, obviously we have our family conference coming up in July, and that's a real big thing for us. The really interesting thing is we're going to have a science meeting. What I also didn't mention that's a big part of what we do is we've formed 9 clinics around the country that focus specifically on Duke 15Q. So we're going to have a clinics meeting as well as a 3-day family meeting. So it's going to be an amazing event to have all 3 of these things going on simultaneously down in Florida. It'll be great for the clinicians and the researchers to actually see the children as well and interact with them. So that's a huge part of 2015 for us is our conference. But we also have large research goals. We want to continue to push the research forward, find some answers for these seizures, and to help our families and help, obviously, the children who are affected by Duke 15Q syndrome. And to do that, we need, obviously, fundraising, and we need to get the funds to fund this important research.
So, in your time with the Alliance, is there any one success moment that stands out for you?
I would say what I'm most proud about is the development of the 9 Duke 15Q clinics. I think that's something that has really been a great source of support for our families and a great resource to finally be at a place where, one, the medical community understands your child and they know how to handle and treat your child. Oftentimes our families are so isolated that they'll go to a doctor and they really don't know what to do or how to treat our children. So this has been a real big turning point for us, not only for supporting our families, but we've also created a network amongst the clinicians. And so we're sharing information and finding things, commonalities and trends within the syndrome that if everyone operated in their own little pocket of the world, we wouldn't see that. So it's been a twofold success, one for families and one for research and better understanding Duke 15Q syndrome.
So you mentioned there are treatments available. As part of the family support you provide, does that include things like doctor referrals?
Yes, we do have, on our website, we list out the clinics that have been established. We also, to this point, we don't have specific targeted treatments, but that is something that we're moving and pushing towards with the research. We do have guidelines and developing best practices for handling whether it's behaviors or seizures, GI issues, things like that. So we're giving advice on how to best handle those. But in terms of actually, there's no cure for Duke 15Q, but we're looking for targeted treatments, things that can improve their quality of life and try to reverse some of the symptoms that they are having.
Well, like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay.
It's always amazing to me, folks, that a disability or a condition can be perceived as rare or unknown. If it's affecting one person, it's affecting another. And we as a society are stronger in numbers. So I always love to hear when a family organization branches out, when an organization just takes steps they can, no matter how much distance may be between individual members, they take the steps forward just to do what they can to make things better for others affected. It may seem like a long reach, but in our globalized society, it's easier today to reach out to others than it ever has been, to share information, insights, and from there, to start moving forward. Most important recognition in disability life can be, I am not alone. Fact is, once you understand that, you can reach out, you can ask others of similar experiences. They might not have all the answers. No one in the world does. Fact is, if they can share insights that would benefit one another, it really is something they should explore the possibility of. Knowing what a condition is like and knowing how it can affect a person, that is a basis that says, somebody else is going through this. I want to be someone there to help support them. Be a positive source of information and of support. Who knows? I might even learn something myself. I mean, having information about a condition, having your own experience, that's fine. But, fact is, seeing how that compares with others' insights, others' experiences, only makes you stronger in whatever it is you're dealing with. Truth is, we can all benefit from that strength. Strength that comes from knowing there is hope in the world. And that is a human need, not just one for individuals with disabilities. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Winter weather is unpredictable. Drive with extra care this winter. It takes longer to stop in winter conditions. Reduce your speed and increase the distance between your vehicle and others. Walkers, joggers, and cyclists should continue to be safe and be seen. Wear bright and reflective clothing so you are more visible to drivers. This important message is from the Windsor-Essex County Injury Prevention Coalition, reminding everyone to slow down, stay alert, and stay in control.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Caddy Lushsinger from the Dupe 15Q Alliance. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Steve Son from Able Gamers. Tell me a little bit about Able Gamers.
Okay. Able Gamers is a 501c3 nonprofit charity that utilizes the power of video games to help children, adults, and veterans with disabilities. So basically what we do is there is a gap between what someone with a disability might be able to accomplish with standard equipment and the assistive technology that's available that's quite expensive is sometimes out of reach for people who don't have a large disposable income. Our mission is to bridge that gap and bring people from an area where they may not be able to access a game into being able to fully get back into gaming, whether it's for recreation or rehabilitation or just because they want to. And also, we reach out to developers and help them to design more inclusive games from the start so that hopefully gamers don't need as much of the assistive technology as we would have to issue to them otherwise.
So, when you mention the assistive technology, for those who aren't as familiar, could you give me some examples?
Yeah, when we're talking about assistive technology, we're talking about anything that helps people be able to play in a quote-unquote normal setting. So if you have one hand taking a controller and modifying it so that all the buttons are on one side of the controller would be an assistive technology for a controller. And then from there, you start getting more complicated. Like, we have things that you can turn your head up, left, right, down, right, circles in order to hit buttons. Or, you know, so say if you're in a simulator or if you're in a game where you have to hit a lot of buttons, just being able to turn your head can mean that you can hit an additional 4, 8, 16 buttons. We have other devices that are a little more cutting edge, like eye tracking. The problem with eye tracking is that it's not compatible with most games. Most developers haven't implemented the software parts that need to be there for eye tracking to work properly. It does work for some people in some situations, but it's sort of a newer technology. We like to use 3D printing whenever we can to help design fresh, never-before-made devices. So if you have, say, a multiple sclerosis, or if you have cerebral palsy, and you can't move your arms in the fashion that a joystick would require you to do, we could make a larger joystick with bigger buttons so that it's harder for your tremors to hit the wrong button. Or if you have a limited amount of movement, like, say, a muscular dystrophy, we can give you very, very sensitive switches that you would only have to push with the weight of a feather in order to activate the button. We find that there really is no solution that is right for everyone. So you really have to sort of know the entire gambit of accessible technology and just sort of piecemeal it together until you get a setup that works for you.
So, in your time working in this accessible technology, is there any one success moment that stands out for you?
Quite honestly, Cam, there's a lot of them. When I think about my favorite moments while I've been working at Able Gamers for almost the last 8 years now. We visit expos that are called Abilities Expos, and basically they're a giant gathering place where all of the vendors who service the disability community come and sort of show off what they can do to help the community, and people come in and check out products and whatnot. And we ended up going there just sort of to let people know that you can have fun in video games without having to sort of watch other people, or for caretakers that are not quite so keen on letting their sister, daughter, brother play video games, who, you know, maybe are not of the younger generation, they might have some hesitancy. So we went there sort of with a large arcade. We had, like 4 TVs, 4 Xboxes, various assistive technology, things that, you know, someone with muscular dystrophy can play, things that someone with a quadriplegic can play, and even some stuff that a blind gamer or someone who is mentally or cognitively challenged would be able to play. So we really sort of had the full gambit there, and we spent an entire weekend. It was a very successful run, and towards the end of it, there was the family. And the family had, you know, a mom and a dad and a brother and a sister, and a brother who was younger, maybe 9 years old. He was severely disabled, some sort of neuromuscular disease. He was reclined in a wheelchair with a heart monitor, just sort of not really moving anything, but obviously looking around at everything and enjoying the experience. And they were kind of on the outside edge of the expo event. And we were like, you know, why don't you come on in, you know, check it out. And they were like, no, you know, this isn't for us. You know, we wouldn't be able to interact with the games anyway. And I talked them into it. I said, you know, let us give it a shot. They came over to our Xbox. We were playing a racing game called Forza 3. And we started showing them via Droid, which is a controller that Able Gamers made in conjunction with Evil Controllers that can allow someone who has a muscular dystrophy to push just a few buttons instead of holding an entire Xbox controller. This family was, you know, really into it. They're really like, this is amazing, you know, I hope that, you know, it helps a lot of people. And we're like, well, why don't we give it a shot with your son? And again, they were hesitant. Finally, they allowed us to check it out and see what we could do. We noticed that while he was watching the game, there was some foot movement. So we were like, well, okay, why don't we grab one of our foot pedals, which just looks like a gas pedal, and hold it up to him and see what happens. So we plugged everything in, grabbed the foot pedal, and he got his foot on the gas pedal and started tapping it, and the car started moving. And he just lit up like a Christmas tree. He was just so happy and squealing and loving it. And before you knew it, he was running around the track and crashing into other cars and enjoying himself very, very much. And the family was happy. We gave them the information on how to do this at home. And if they needed any financial help, they could come to us. And they thanked us and went on their way. And I was happy with that. About, let's say, 30 minutes later, almost before closing on the last day, I get a tap on the shoulder, and I turn around to see this giant 6'2" man that makes The Rock look like a small guy standing behind me, and he's got tears in his eyes. And he just says, thank you. You allowed my son to be able to game. And I said, well, sure, you know, that's what we do here. It's no problem at all. And he said, now you don't understand. He doesn't verbally communicate. But whenever video game commercials would come on the TV, he would always get really excited and start shaking. And we knew that he wanted to game, and we didn't know how to make that happen and didn't think it could happen. So thank you for giving my son an impossible dream. And, man, I tell you what, that hit me so hard. That day, I realized why I do what I do and why we put so many hours into helping people. Because we're not just getting people into video games. We're really helping them do something that they thought might have been otherwise impossible.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Absolutely.
What an amazing gift to give to a parent and their child with a disability. For a parent, seeing a child responsive, reactive, for the very first time, in a way that would hold such meaning for them, it's an overwhelming thing. For the child themselves, being able to enjoy and participate in something just so relaxing, so freeing. I know from personal experience that video games can have profoundly relaxing and therapeutic effect on a person with a disability. Fact is, the new technology makes it so it's not impossible for someone to get in on these games and to enjoy. Fact is, back in the old days when the technology was much, much simpler, might have been inconceivable to us as a society. But as we grow in our technological understanding, so too do we grow in our human understanding. We recognize that the new technologies we develop can have all sorts of amazing applications, including for individuals with disabilities. Mentioning of the eye tracking technology is just incredible. True, it's still in what you might call the preliminary stages, but fact is, we keep pushing forward. We keep seeing how much better we can make these devices. The benefit will continue to grow. It's all a matter of thinking creatively, I think. Asking the question, what can we do with this that's never been done before? How can we expand this idea? And that's giving a gift not just to individuals with disabilities, but to anyone in society. But developing this technology for individuals with disabilities can have the impact making able-bodied technologies more effective. Because if you're creating something that precise for a person with a disability, an able-bodied person might say, this enhancement works. I think I'll stick with it. Truth is, technological innovations such as these can do wonders for the disabled community, but not just in the sense of providing them a better opportunity to enjoy these games. The fact that these technologies are working on something that so many of us enjoy can really bring the idea to the forefront of our minds that a person with a disability uses this technology so they too can enjoy it. Might get us all thinking more to ourselves. If they can do this, if this technology can be adapted, what's the next step? What else can be developed? What else can be created? That's what it's all about. Never resting on our laurels, folks. Fact is, if progress were to stagnate, we as a society would simply collapse. If we said, we have these policies and these technologies, that's as good as it's going to get, what would be left to shoot for? What would be left to dream of or to create? Fact is, disability life, disability technology, is already so far beyond what they ever could have conceived of 150 years ago that it boggles the mind. True. In some ways, human beings aren't as far along as we'd expected to be. I mean, we're not out there colonizing other planets yet. But the fact is, when we do take those steps for the future, whatever they may be, it's important that individuals with disabilities be included among them. For if we say to ourselves, this is the best we can make something, even if it seems on the surface to be perfect, a policy, a technology, upkeep is always critical. Fact is, we have to keep asking, is this working correctly? Are all pieces in play? Are we as a society holding up and holding true to these policies that we've established, that we've worked so hard on? Is this technology getting its regular maintenance? Is it in proper working order? It's organizations like Able Gamers that are providing opportunities just to make use of the best of human ingenuity. Ingenuity benefits us all in the long run. I mean, for a person with a disability, say his friends are out there enjoying their games, playing, having a great old time. He wants to be a part of that. With groups like this, technologies like this, such a person would be able to. And I guarantee you, while engaging in these games, it's a freeing experience. You're not thinking about what could go wrong, what could be a limitation. You're thinking about, can I get to the next level? Can I beat the boss? Can I do this? And the fact is, like with anyone in society, a person with a disability who practices their games will inevitably get better at them. Even if it starts off being just a limited opportunity, a limited scope, at least that's a start, at least that's a beginning place for more software developers to say, gee, we could expand our marketing base if we only took these simple steps. And they've already got a template, so we're not breaking any new ground here. But in a way, they are breaking new ground. For with each new game, each new moment of enjoyment for a person with a disability, it opens up a world of possibilities. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.